It is now my privilege to introduce our speaker for this evening. His name is not down here. Bob M. Yes. Bob M.
How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm very good.
Oh, already. They gave me this, can you hear me okay? My name's Bob and I'm an alcoholic. Mark, you said you're going to help me out here.
Mark.
Lift it up. Up. Volume up. Is that okay? Are we good there? Okay. God, I feel like Joel Osteen with this thing here. I'm joking, okay? Yeah. Good there? Okay. Well, I'd like to welcome our newcomers that are here tonight. I know I've seen a couple in here tonight, and I'd like to welcome you and encourage you to stay. You know, I'm hoping that something I share with you, you can say, you know what, I've been like that before, and there's some similarities that we may have. You know, and I encourage you to stick around, and it works. It really does. My life has changed. It's changed immensely. You know, let's see, I also like to welcome our visitors here tonight. I know there's one here, and he drove all the way from Fresno. And I know why he's here, just to keep me honest, you know. You know, and I'd like to thank Ron and Nancy for asking me to speak tonight. You know, I don't know where Ron is at, but we both go to the Sunday Jimmy the Wrench meeting. And he said, you know what, hey, can I speak to you after the meeting? I said, sure, Ron, because he's got a family, I got a family. And sometimes we share in a general way, and I come back over here, and he says, Bob, would you like to speak at the chili cook-off? And the first thing out of my mind is, nope. Nope. But as you look at Ron, how could you refuse Ron? You know, you just can't refuse Ron, and Nancy too as well. So thank you for allowing me to come and talk tonight. Like I said, my name's Bob, and I'm an alcoholic. And in case any of you don't know, I'm also married to Cindy. So, and we'll talk about that later. You know, and there's something I'd like to read to you, and it's chances are it's not in your big book, but it's in mine. And it's dated, and I get emotional whenever I read this, and it's dated 11/24/90. And it says, hey Bob, what it is? Sobriety is what it is. May you always ask God to walk with you, and whatever you do, he wants to know you, allow him to love you. Easy does it. To thine own self be true, Hector V. You know, that was in 1990. Those are the type of men that I followed. Those are the type of men that have inspired me along the way. Those are the type of men that encouraged me. You know, it was always God first, others second, and me last. And that was right off the bat. You know, I was born and raised in Fresno. And I drank. I started drinking when I was 22. And I crossed the line when I was 24. And I came in Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 29. And a lot of my drinking, the way my drinking started was in a fraternity system. I don't blame the fraternity, it just happened that way. You know, and you go through the rush week, and it's a Monday through Thursday thing, and a Friday they extend a bid. And what I come to find out on Thursday, by the time Thursday came around, I had a capacity to be able to drink alcohol. You know, Coors Light, and it just went down. You know, and I drank six. You know, that was a lot for me. You know, I grew up where my dad was always telling me, you're responsible for your actions. So, you know, I drank those six beers. And one of the things that happened to me, I didn't have a spiritual awakening, but man, did I ever, I became that guy I always wanted to be. Suavecito Bob, you know? I could talk to the girls, you know, and they had these long dresses on. And I can go up to them and I could sell ice to an Eskimo, you know? And those fraternity brothers, I explained to them why you wanted to have me in their fraternity. You know, and it was on, it was that magic elixir I've always missed all my life because I never really fit in. Always that outsider looking in. And I share that because I've heard that so many times around the table. And by the time Thursday rolled around and I'm drinking doing the drink and I'm feeling better about myself, my perception changed. All of a sudden, you were asking me come over here instead of me having that barrier up. And when that barrier was broke down and I felt like you were wanted me around, man, that was great. And I loved it. And I wanted it and I wanted it and I wanted it. You know, I spent 4 years in that fraternity, and they were happy to see me go after 4 years. You know, it took me 5 years in and out of school. You know, doing the deal, lying, cheating, and I started participating in extracurricular activities. You know, the white stuff back then. And the reason I got into that stuff is because it helped me to accelerate my drinking. When I did that, I was like a garbage disposal. I would do that, and then I'd continue to drink and drink and drink. Love to binge drink. Love to binge drink. You know, I'd love to party through Monday all the way to the following Monday. Forget it. Let's do it. You know, that's how my life went. And they were happy to see me go, and I did the best thing. Next best thing that I came to do really well as a practicing alcoholic is I took a geographic, and I landed in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. You know, and shoot, move, and communicate there in the Army. You know, here's this guy from California, and all of a sudden, it's snow. And I'm like, what is snow? You know, it's cold here. You know, and you got these guys with the round brown, these drill sergeants, and they're up in your grill. They are up in you. You know, they're and the next thing I know, running 6 to 8 miles a day. You know, I was a pretty good soldier. Got out of that, and went into AIT at Fort Sill and was able to get out. But one of the things I noticed from my prior drinking is that I was managing and controlling my drinking, like the book talks about. I knew that if I went over and beyond, the uniform code of military justice was waiting for me, you know, and I knew that. So I got to my first duty station, and it was on again. I did not know how to stop. And next thing you know, extra duty, reduction of rank. I mean, I can give you the whole background about it, but I totally destroyed everything that I had. You know, for me as a practiced alcoholic, I'm a fast starter and a lousy finisher. You know, I'll bring you into my world and I'll just devastate it. You know, and I like to take things down. You know, I got out of Fort Ord over there in Monterey by the skin of my BDUs. You know, I barely got out and held a little bit of rank and got an honorable discharge. And, you know, I went back over to Fresno and I started doing the things that I do again. This time over on the west side of Fresno. You know, and you go over there, you got to be wearing the right colors. You know, and I started participating more in extracurricular activities. You know, and I started drinking more. And I was renting a little room over at a house there in Fresno. And it got to the point where I totally ostracized myself and my family. Because my family, you know, they're sick and tired of bailing me out of jail. They're sick and tired of bailing me out of putting their house up for mortgage because they wanted to make sure that I could get out of jail. And they were tired of it. And what I did is I started staying away from my family. You know, and friends didn't have friends as well either, too. You know, the friends I did have were the friends that, you know, I'd party with, and the lack of money. Didn't have any money anymore. And I was one of those paranoia guys. You didn't want to hang out with me. You know, you hang out with me, I'd just totally destroy your buzz. So I'd love to take peekaboo and look under doors and all that crazy stuff. You know, you say, Bob, stay away. We don't want you around. You know, and then jobs. I'm a temporary agency guy. You know, I'd like to go and work that week, and they give you the check at the end of the week. So I get the end of the week, and then I'd go back to work on a Tuesday. You know, where's Monday at? You know, and I burned all the temporary agencies around town, and after a while, they said, you know, Bob, just don't call us. We'll call you. You know, don't call us. So it got to the point in my life where I couldn't live with alcohol, and I couldn't live without it. You know, I chose to. It got to the point where I just wanted to die. I just wanted to, I wanted it over because the alcohol was no longer working anymore. It was to the point where I was always fearful of not being able to sleep. And I would drink and drink and drink and I wouldn't go to sleep. And the problems wouldn't go away. I could no longer escape anymore. And it just, the booze was no longer drinking. So I figured, you know what? I'm just going to drink myself to death. And so I went and got all my alcohol together and I just started putting it down my system. Started putting down my system there. You know, and one of the things that I did is I got to the point where I was blacking out and coming to, blacking out and coming to. And then finally, I got a 12-step call. You know, a man came and picked me up. I'm one of those 12-step call guys. And he came up and he picked me up at the house and he took me to the hospital. You know, and they got me into detox. And there I was again in my second psychiatric ward in my third detox. You know, and I'm laying there on that bed, and I look down, and I got that wristband again. I don't know if any of you have been in the hospital before. You see the wristband, you look down, I did it again. You know, and I'm passing out, you know, falling asleep, coming to. About the third day, I heard my parents out in the hallway. You know, and my dad telling the doctor, we're not going to do this anymore for him. It's not going to happen. We cannot continue to bail him out. We cannot continue to take care of his hospital bills. It's just not working. You know, and my mom and dad walked out of the hospital, and I sat there, and I laid there on that bed. And it was one of those things where I was so full of fear. I didn't know what to do. It was almost like I had gotten into the ring with a WWE wrestler, 7'4". And he drove me right down through the mat to the concrete. And that's how devastated I was. You know, the doctor comes back in and says, well, you know what? Got to discharge you today because you don't have any health insurance. So he said, I got a plan for you. You know, I got a plan for you. And he came back in later on. He says, I can get you into the VA hospital, but you got to stay sober. You know, it was on a Sunday and a Wednesday at 10 o'clock. You know, you can't have any alcohol in you, and you can't have any beer, any drugs or anything like that in you. And can you do it? And I said, I think I can. And he says, I suggest you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I had that one last friend, you know, that last friend you have who drives a Comet, an orange Comet, and he picks you up. And the last guy that you always burnt all those times, but he comes and he picks you up. Well, he came and picked me up. And he took me back to his house. And what I did is I got into the Yellow Pages. And I found Central Office there. Central Office. And you guys picked up the phone for me. Central Office picked up the phone for me in Fresno. And you talked to me on the phone, and you guided me to my first meeting there in Fresno at the Lana Club in Fresno there. You know, that's how it started for me, and I haven't had a drink since then. My sobriety date is September 11, 1990. And for that, I'm forever grateful. You know, and that first meeting there, I was greeted. One of the things there that happened for me is I was greeted. You know, somebody reached out their hand and welcomed me there. And then they sat me down on the chair. You know, I said, I'm glad you're here. You know, and anybody knows me, you know, it was a birthday meeting. And of course, they got the cake. I love cake. You know, they got the coffee going on. And the man's serving me coffee. You know, he's actually being a service to me, and I didn't understand it. I thought it was weird. But I come to find out later, that's what we do here at Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, of course, you got all the slogans up on the wall, the live and let live, surrender to win, you know, think, which doesn't even apply to me today, because I think too much, you know. And I found that for the next couple days, the man took me to the meetings, you know, and then I got a ride over to the VA hospital. And I'm one of those 28-day program guys, you know, where you go in there for 28 days and at the VA hospital. And the VA hospital to me was a bridge to Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a bridge to God. That's how it's been in my life. You know, and I finished my 28-day program, and I moved back to that little house where I tried to kill myself. And I started living off food stamps. I started living off Social Security, bus tokens, meal tickets, whatever I could do. You told me 90 meetings in 90 days. You told me, go to meetings, go to meetings, go to meetings. You know, and if you can't get a ride, because I used to take the bus tokens and go off to meetings there, and the meetings we'd done at 8 o'clock at night, I'd ask you for a ride home, and you'd give me a ride home. You know, all it took was me asking you for a ride home. It was suggested. It also suggested that I go out and greet you too as well. Don't wait for you to come to me go to you. Because the man that I was spending time with knew me. I was an isolator. I was afraid of people. And he said, you know what? You go out and meet people and get their phone number. There's not going to be no phone list for you. You develop your own phone list. You know, and what happens is I started developing a Rolodex. And I don't know if any of you know what a Rolodex is, right? So I started writing these names and numbers on Rolodexes. You know, and my list got a little bit bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, you also suggested that I get a service. Nothing big, just go in there and wash those ashtrays. And I like, wash those ashtrays? Because at the time, they would mix the ashtrays and the mugs in the same. And I got OCD. You know, and I'm like, well, separate them out. And they kept on throwing things in and washing them, whatever. So what I learned to this day is, God, I'm going to give it up right now. You'll never see me drink out of a mug at one of the clubs. I just don't do it. Friday, I went to the podium meeting on Friday. I went to the podium meeting on Friday night, and I wanted a cup of coffee so bad. I said, that means I got to go get a mug. And I said, no, I'm good. You know, and 90 meetings in 90 days, and you told me to do the deal. And what happened to me is I got activated after 65 days of sobriety. I got a phone call, and they activated me to go participate in Operation Desert Shield. It was Desert Shield at the time. So I did what was suggested to me. I called my sponsor. I left him my message on his answer machine, not voicemail, answer machine. Told my mom, asked her to call my dad and let my dad know, because my dad and I hadn't talked for a couple of years. We just didn't have a very good relationship. And I reported over to the Armory. And I took this big book right here, this exact one, and I went into the Armory there, and I talked to my section chief, because I was told we can't take any books over there to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia with God in it. Okay. And then I also wanted to take my Bible, because, you know, it was suggested that I read the stories in the back of the big book and read the big book. So I go upstairs, and it was suggested I go talk to the chaplain. And see, in a headquarters detachment unit, the only way a chaplain is assigned to you is when you get activated. And this chaplain got activated from down south in Arcadia, from what I know. So I go up there and I introduce myself. I'm Specialist Felix, and sir, I'm here. And I said, I got this issue right now. I said, I got this book I'm supposed to read. We got these guys called old timers. They tell you what to do. And I got this other guy I spend time with, and he tells me what to do. Everybody wants to tell me what to do, you know? And this got God in here, and I have to take this book. I promise I'll keep it in my Ziploc bag. I promise I'll keep it in my rucksack. I promise I'll keep it hidden away. And he said, don't worry about it. I'm taking my big book. You see, he had 22 years of sobriety. 22 years. And right there, I knew that God was starting to do for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, starting from the 12-step call all the way to Major Bob. So I got deployed over to, we palmed out of Monterey, prepare for overseas movement out of Monterey. And I went back to my old unit that I didn't do very good at. And they're happy to see me. They're happy to see me and spend time with me. They're happy that I was a few months sober, the unit that had. And then I come to find out that I had lost all my rank. And I got my rank back before I got discharged. And I found out that a lot of men went to bat for me so I could get my rank back before I got discharged. Those are stories that you hear later on, you know, and I was very grateful for that. And I got out, I went over to Saudi Arabia and landed over there in the desert almost about 28 years ago, I believe, 30 years ago, 1991, so, okay, a long time ago. And I landed in that desert. And I was part of the advanced detachment, so I was always going ahead of the unit. And see, Major Bob was having to minister to 500 soldiers, because that's how big the company was, and I was part of the detachment. So I was out 2 weeks ahead of him across the desert. And I'd go, and he'd show up a couple weeks later, 2 to 3 weeks later. And, you know, he would I'd show up, and he'd crock that finger over here, and we're having a meeting. So we'd have a meeting. We sit there and share one alcoholic with another alcoholic, you know, and God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, you know, and a lot of things. And I would read this big book at night. I would read it under a poncho liner with a red flashlight, you know, and I'd read the stories in the back of the book, because it was important for me to read the stories in the back of the book, because it kept me closer to you back here. You know, it kept me a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and my mornings would start. I'd pray for y'all back home. I'd pray for my family. I'd pray for the service. You know, and then I'd ask God to keep me safe for another day. You know, and it happened. You know, and I came back 10 months sober. Through the grace of God, I came back 10 months sober. And I came back to a ticker tape parade there in Fresno. You know, I had arrived, you know, You know, we're on a float through Fresno, and you're waving to everybody. Yeah, here I am, you know, and I got 10 months sobriety, you know, when I last saw Major Bob, he said, you know what, you know what you need to do. And I got back into Alcoholics Anonymous immediately. And I had the family afterwards with my mom, my dad. They invited me to live back home. I hadn't lived back home in 10 years. You know, one of the things that I have to share this with you that happened, I just thought about it a couple days ago, that when I went back and lived with my mom and my dad, my mom said, hey, can I sit down and talk with you? And I said, oh, shoot, here it comes. I'm not a step eight yet. You know, I haven't made my, you know, well, I'm not ready for any. So I'm sitting there and she said, you know, before I left, you have to have a beneficiary and somebody on your checking account. And before I left over to go over to the desert, I said, you know what? I owed everybody, St. Agnes Hospital, PG&E. I mean, I owed everybody thousands. And I told her, only pay a certain amount a month. You know, I'm selfish, self-centered, because I want all the money, you know? Only pay a certain. So I come home, and she says, I paid everybody off. And I thought to myself, how dare you? That's my money, you know? And she saw the look in my body language. I didn't say that. And so she handed me my checkbook. And there was some money in there. There was some money in there. You know, and I thought, wow. And then I got up and she says, wait a second. And she handed me a savings account. There was more money in the savings account than the checking account. You know, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, I was clean. I didn't owe anybody anything. And it's amazing how that works. If I go ahead and I do the work. You know, and I got back and I got to that first meeting there at the Lana Club my home group in the Valley is the 11 o'clock step study meeting. It's 11 to 12:30. The meetings for that meeting is an hour and a half. You know, and I walked into that meeting and smoke all over the place, right? You guys smoked. Smoke, smoke, smoke. And they have this one little smoker's table. Like really, it's, you know, and it's not secondhand smoke, it's firsthand smoke, you know? And you got, the only thing is, it doesn't have ashtrays and no one smokes there. So I go and I sit down next to my sponsor there and I scan the room, you know, because, you know, I'm wearing my Army shirt, I got high and tight. You know, I'm look at me, Bob, you know, look at me, you know, and I'm looking around and I look and I see, oh my goodness, I see this young lady out of the corner of my eye. And I don't know if any of you guys are like me, I'm sneaking a peek, you know? You know, you sneak a peek, you look that way, and then you look the other way, and then, you know, and I'm doing that, and I got a chance to share, and I'm doing the meeting after the meeting, and all of a sudden, I get a tap on my shoulder, and I turn around, and it's that young lady, and she sticks her hand out and says, hi, my name is Cindy, and I like what you had to share. And I said, and I thought to myself, I bet you did. Yeah. So she asked for my phone number, and yeah, sweetheart, you know it's the truth. She asked for my phone number, and she took off, and I'm one of those guys that I was all my heart is powder and all of this, you know. And I'm thinking, I got 10 months, and at the time she had more time than I did. You know, I thought, oh, they say don't get in a relationship for the first year. I thought, oh, we're both coming up to the year, so maybe, you know, my head's starting to run, you know. But I do know I had women issues I had to work through before I could get in a relationship. You know? The meeting's almost over, and I run over to the door because I got to see what kind of car she's driving. You know? And she gets into this white Nova with traction bars on it. You know, the traction bars. Yeah, she backs out, right through the speed bump. Boom, right out the... Matter of fact, I think they have new speed bumps there now. And I looked at her and I thought to myself, man, she's bold, check. She's beautiful, check. And she's got personality, check. It's everything I wanted, you know? You know, and I got back into one of the things that was suggested to me to get in service. You know, and a lot of the guys there at the Lana Club were doing prisons, they were doing jail, and what I did is I got back into the outpatient program at the VA hospital. I wanted to complete my program. Very important. And I started doing that, and one of the counselors suggested I get into start doing detox work. So I started working detox up on the seventh floor. And you wear a blue smock, and you take in... You work with guys that they come right in fresh, you know. And one of the things I've learned about doing being a service in that manner is, and I did that for 3 days a week. I learned how to listen. I learned how to be around other alcoholics that are just coming out, and you know, they really don't know about what's going on, and they're detoxing. You know, and if they through the grace of God, I know there's an opening, and I'll share my experience with them, and I'll share with them, and that has helped me out all throughout my years of sobriety. to be able to talk with another alcoholic, to know when to talk and when to listen. It's very, for me, it's very important. Because as an alcoholic, I want to sometimes throw my will and my life into there, but I know just to back off sometimes and just let it go. Let God take care of the situation there. You know, and working the detox, it was amazing. You know, one of the stories I like to share is I was up there, and just like the book talks about, the nurse's name. She says, "Bob, we got a real live one today." I said, "Oh, my goodness." And he's got a mouth. And a matter of fact, he still has a mouth today. And I go in there, and he's all balled up, you know. And he's F this, F that. What are you looking at? And I got my blue smock on. I think I'm looking good. You think you look good? And, oh, man, he's running his mouth. And I'm like, "Bro, you're the one with the wristband, not me, you know." So he kept on. And I was like, "Okay, so I got something for you." So it was a Friday before the weekend, so I went and got him an extra small size of pajamas. You know, try that one on. So he spent the whole weekend in small pajamas. And I came back, yeah, I freely admit that today. He's also my brother, Jeff. And he was the best man at my wedding. We've been doing this for, I think you're over 28 now, aren't you? Yeah, we still know who the newcomer is. Yeah, over 28 years. You know, I'll just take a quick break. I've been blessed to have a couple of strong guys in my life. And that's how I roll. That's what the things I do. I stay in the middle of the herd, you know. And I did the detox, and I was driving the druggy buggy on Friday, Saturday nights. You drive them all around. So whenever I see the detox guys come into the 1600 Club, I love sitting over there because I feel at home. You know, that's how it all started for me. You know, and I continued on with the service work. And I secretaried the meeting on Wednesday night. And I share this because this is what was suggested me to get into service. And on those Wednesday nights, it was a VA meeting, it was a speaker seeker. They'd have 50, 60 people there. And my commitment, I'd have to show up an hour and a half prior to the meeting to go make coffee. Because the coffee, it was 3 gallons of coffee. You know, you got to show up because I've got a perk. And I was up at the fourth floor. You walk down, meet the speaker. It's on. And then you do it. It's an hour and a half over. And my whole Wednesday's a service. You know, and during this time, I'm working with my sponsor. One of the things I loved about working with my sponsors, he'd take me out to Chinese food on Saturday mornings. You know, I love Chinese food, you know, and we'd talk about what was going on in our life and work through the steps. You know, at this time, I was doing Boy Meets Girl. Boy Meets Girl. I was dating. We were dating. And I started dating that young lady. And I started caring more about her sobriety than mine, you know, and that's a pit that I fell into. It got to the point where I was getting concerned about the sponsor that she was going to choose. I was afraid that she would choose the wrong sponsor, a sponsor that wouldn't want me to be her boyfriend. You know, those are the things that go inside the man, alcoholic of a man who's in a relationship with another lady in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I start dealing with the relapses. You know, the relapses are tough. When you're on the other end of the relapses, you're waiting for that person to come home. And, you know, I can paint the pictures of what happens when our lady alcoholics go out. And it was tough. It was tough. I was on an emotional roller coaster for about a year and a half. And it was devastating. And I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous and being able to be of service in the men around me. I don't know, I think Jeff might have picked me up a couple times at my sponsor's house in Tulare because I was crying. I was so worried about where she was, what she was doing. You know, I sometimes say that I've been in 4 treatment programs, 1 for me and 3 for her. But on that last treatment program, you know, is at the Olive Street branch, and one of the counselors is an old timer, and he said, "I need to talk to you after the meeting." And I went in there, and I thought he was going to ask me congratulations on your 2.5 years of sobriety, you know. And he says, you need help. And I said, oh, okay. And he says, I suggest you go to Al-Anon. And I said, no, I'm fine with Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, no, you need to go to Al-Anon. And I have some numbers for you to call. And so I started following suggestions and making phone calls. And I started going to the other meetings of our sister fellowship. And I realized over there it wasn't talking about you drunk. It was eating good inside. And being able to detach from a relationship. That I'm not responsible for that person no matter what they do. And that's helped me out even in sponsorship. Because I cannot carry the alcoholic. All I can do is take the message to the alcoholic. And I thank God for those ladies there at Al-Anon who had allowed me to go in there and cry. You know, and that's what it took. I remember Jeff telling me, let's go to a meeting. You know, let's go. You got to go. I didn't want to go, but I went anyway. You know, I'd go to those meetings. And after a while, I realized the relationship wasn't going to work. And I had just gotten accepted to Cal Poly, and I knew it was time for me. I kept moving forward. You guys kept on encouraging me. Bob, you gotta apply to UCLA, Cal Poly. You gotta keep it going. She's gonna do what she's gonna do. And so we came together and we decided to go ahead and let each other go. So let each other go. And I went off to Cal Poly for the next 3 years. You know, and I got involved in the Melody Group up there in San Luis Obispo, and I got involved in the Al-Anon up there too as well. Thank God for those ladies. You know, and I cried about it, and I cried about it, and I cried about it, and it just got better and better. I'm a crier. I'll just tell you, I'm a crier, you know. It was kind of funny. I hope I don't lose myself on this, but I went to the Melody Group about a few years ago, and I had showed up. I'd been in Arizona for a while, and one of the ladies saw me there after one of the meetings, and she said, I know you. And I said, yeah, I know you too. Your name is so-and-so. Said, yeah, you're the one who used to cry at all the meetings. And she says, by the way, what happened to that girlfriend of yours? And this other old timer that I know from out of group, he married her. God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, you know. And I finished off with Cal Poly, and what I did for the next 15 years is I traveled around in construction management. You know, I traveled around and I was able to be a service at other meetings around the southwestern United States. I'd work 410s. The way construction management would work for me is I'd fly out on a Sunday morning, and I'd fly back in a Thursday night. You know, and one of these Thursday nights, I flew in, and what I usually do is stop and get Cinnabons when we're living in Arizona. And I would walk in through the door, and Cindy loves her Cinnabons, you know. And let me just step back for a second. What happened here is I was up at Cal Poly for those, I just finished Cal Poly, and I come back into Fresno. And of course, I wanted to go, and I visited with Jeff. And we're over at his house. And he's asking, hey, have you talked to Cindy lately? I says, no. She's doing good. You know, she's got her own house. You know, she's a few years sober. She's doing the deal. You gotta call her up. No. Had enough of that. Like it's like, I won't go there. So next thing you know, he's on the phone. He's calling her mom and dad's house. I said, what are you doing? I'm calling her up. And next thing, Tilly, that's my mother-in-law, who I just love. And she says, yeah. And she's on the phone. Jeff hands me the phone. Talk to her. And we talked. We talked. And we started dating again. I realized that, you know what, she had gotten well. I had gotten better. And God had a plan. I never know what God's plan is for me. But I know if I take the action that it all happens the way it's supposed to happen. And that was the miracle, how we got back together, we got married. And what happened for us too is that the man that came and 12-stepped me, I came to find out later on that I had called a parish on one of my blackouts when I was on that beanbag chair trying to take myself out. And the Monsignor from another parish happened to be at this parish that I had called up because I had worked at Burger King. For some reason, I called the parish next to the Burger King I used to work at. And it just so happened that Monsignor was at that parish, and Monsignors don't go to different parishes. He just happened to be there that day. And I talked to the secretary, and I told her that I wanted to kill myself. And she handed the phone over to him, and he had just happened to have 2 years of sobriety. So that's how it worked in my life. So that man came and he cross-stepped me, the Monsignor. So 7 years later, he married Cindy and I. You know, he married us. Yeah. And that's too many wonderful things happening in my life. God doing for us and me what he can do for for myself. You know, so I fly in there that night into Arizona, and Cindy goes right past the Cinnabons, and she's jumping up and down, and she says, "There's a speaker at the AA state convention there in Phoenix." And I said, "Okay, well, good." And she said, "Well, he's from the Central Coast." And I said, "Oh, okay, well, that's good." And she says, "I'm going with the Westside Fellowship." And I said, "Well, that's good." I said, "But I'm not going. I'm tired, you know." And and the way she is and the way our programs are, she says, "Okay, fine." Boop, she's gone. I respect that about our relationship. I do. And she goes and takes off and she comes back. And of course, I wish I had gone. I'll be honest. So I'm pacing around. You know how us guys are. We pace around wishing we had gone, you know. And then she comes home. I jump on the couch and pretend like, yeah, I'm good. And she comes in and she's excited about the speaker. And she says the speaker rocked it. And the speaker wore a cowboy hat, and he was this and that. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, good for him. I know how to rock it too, you know? So she says he has something. He said he gave me his card, and I put the card in my pocket, and then I took it and I put it in my truck in the little cell phone area there, and I left it there. And that was 2014. We moved back to Orchid here in 2015, July 2015. And when we got back, my other half got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous here locally, and I stayed out in the Five Cities area and the Melody Group, and didn't want to. I stayed away, you know, kind of. And is it time for me to stop?
No.
Okay. Because good, I was still going. You know, and I got back here, and after a while, I started attending meetings here in Orchid, and I started going to the Tuesday night meeting and the Thursday night meeting. That's where I met Victor. You know, and he's my sponsor. And he that attraction that you have is something that I go for the practical spirituality part. You know, it's like those guys seem to be moving along in their life, you know, but actually it's like a duck on water because the duck's paddling quicker than quick under the water, you know, and that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have to do the deal. And I see an old timer there and I see another one there, and I got some issues I got to talk about, and he's pretty hardcore. I think he is, and he reminds me so much of my brother Jeff. You know, they don't mess around with sobriety. They can give it to you straight. And that's what I need in my life. That's how I grew up here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I go up and I meet this old timer, and I see he's got to talk to other people, but he spends the time to talk to me. And he says, "You know what?" He gives me a suggestion. It's about my daughter, and it was a really good suggestion. And I put it into practice when I got home that night. Made the phone call, and he gave me his card, and I put it into my truck. And so I pulled out the card, and it matched the other card that I got. Cindy had brought to me. And I'm like, "Oh my God, the same card!" And it was Lee C. You see, that's what happens. That has been the journey for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Just too many miracles, too many honor God moments, too many times that where God stepping in and doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And all I had to do was this simple program. You know, God first, others second, me last. You know, in my life today here in Orchid has just been, my sponsor says his cup runneth over, my jug runneth over. You know, it does. You know, not the mass sobrieties. But, you know, it's been a joy here. You know, I remember sharing about, I'm going to be one of those elder statesman. You know, I have 25 years. I'm just going to hang out, put my slippers on, and just give suggestions now and then. You know, I might do a coffee commitment. I might do something like this. And what had happened for me is I started being asked to be a sponsor. And I have some young men in my life today that it's amazing the time I get to spend with them. You know, it's amazing some of the old timers I've been in here as well too. And it's just been the way that I share how it was shared with me. They come over to the house. We go through the book. We talk one-on-one. You know, and we're conscientious of each other's schedule. I'm busy, they're busy, and we meet up, and we're conscientious of their schedule. I even have one man that just is so special. Well, they're all special to me, okay? And what he does is he comes up and meets me at my lunch hour at work. That's how bad he wants it. And we sit on that little park bench right out there in Arroyo Grande, and we go through the steps. And he's finished this. We've made the round. Now we're going on traditions. But he takes that effort to drive up there. I get out of work, and there's nothing like being at work hardcore, and then you go and you meet with another alcoholic, and you talk, and you go through it. You know, that's amazing for me. One of the things that I do here is I have this coffee commitment over at the Jimmy the Wrench meeting on Sundays. You know, and because I'm OCD, it takes me about an hour and a half to make the coffee because I want it perfect, you know? I want to just make it perfect. And I get over there, and a lot of times, they're in their hospital rooms. And what I find is sometimes I'll go and I'll get them and wheel them over. And if somebody hasn't done it already. And what I find there is a lot of times when you wheel them over, they want to talk. And they talk to you in their wheelchair, and you have to bend down and get in their space. And you're right next to them, cheek to cheek, and you're holding conversation as you wheel them. You know, and that's amazing for me. That's God just stepping in and just knowing that I'm doing what he would want me to do. You know, and then you go back, you take them back to the room, and they want to talk for 10 minutes, and then they're ready for you to go. And I cherish those moments. You know, I try to stay in the now. You know, I try to enjoy every special moment like that. You know, my life, I have a younger, my daughter and my son, Cindy and I, we're now empty nesters. So it's on at the house. It's on, you know. And what I mean by that is, you know, one of the best things about being married to an alcoholic, right? You never have to take your own inventory. But I do know this, you know, somebody asked me, what is it like to be married to another alcoholic? And I always laugh and I say, it's one day at a time. But I do know this because of earlier our relationship, I know to stay out of this, right? I have this kind of like this little thing, separation of church and state. I see things written around the house and I know better. I don't go pick them up and look at them. It's almost like you're calling for alcohol for this guy. Mm-hmm. I know not to do that. You know, I have a respect for her sobriety, and she has a respect for my sobriety. But we also have that common denominator, which is God. Because we all want to do what His will. We both want to do His will. Sometimes where my life has changed and where I've become more open is she likes to pray in the morning. I'm like, I already prayed, you know. I don't need any more help, you know. So we started doing that. And I enjoy that. It's made my life that much richer. And so I'm so grateful to be here tonight. It's wonderful being a part of the Orchid Fellowship. You know, I just amazing things have happened for me. I'm looking forward towards retirement one day at a time. You know, and it's just, I don't know what God has in store for me, but I know this. If I continue to put my foot forward, I continue to be His service, I continue to work with others, I continue to be open-minded, and one of the things that I've been working on a lot lately, and you probably heard me speaking about this around the meetings, is forgiving people. You know, forgiving people. Because what I find is that I've had some challenges at work, and I hear things that I'm not supposed to hear, and my mind starts running, and what I've started practicing is just forgive. It's not my business. you know, stay out of the business and not carry that rock. You know, not carry that rock. Just drop it off and go. So thank you very much tonight. It's been a wonderful opportunity to speak with y'all.